Radio Prague News.
The Czech Foreign Minister has handed out Gracias Agit Awards to Czech expats and foreigners for promoting the good name of the Czech Republic abroad. Zuzana Čaputová, who is to be sworn in as Slovak president on Saturday, will pay her first official visit to the Czech Republic next week. And the prime ministers of the Visegrad Group states do not have a joint candidate for European Commission president. Foreign Minister Tomáš Petříček on Friday handed out Gracias Agit Awards to 15 Czech expatriates and foreigners for promoting the good name of the Czech Republic abroad. Among this year's recipients were Bohdan Pomahač, a leading plastic surgeon living and working in the United States, and the head of the Festival of Czech Art and Culture Prague-Berlin, Dušan Robert Pařízek. The Czech Foreign Minister thanked the laureates for their good work and highlighted the fact that while some of them had been driven from their homeland during the communist regime, they were not bitter and selflessly contributed to promoting the country's good name abroad. The Gracias Agit Awards were first handed out in 1997, and the ministry has since honoured over 300 individuals and institutions. Zuzana Čaputová, who is to be sworn in as Slovak president on Saturday, will pay her first official visit to the Czech Republic on Thursday. The new Slovak head of state will be received with honours at Prague Castle by President Miloš Zeman, meet with the speakers of both houses of parliament and attend a concert given in her honour on Prague's Kampa Island. She will also lay flowers at the grave of the late President Václav Havel and lay a wreath at the statue of Slovak politician Rastislav Štefánik, one of the co-founders of Czechoslovakia. No meeting with Prime Minister Andrej Babiš has been scheduled since he will be attending a meeting of the European Council at the time, according to the Office of the Government. The prime ministers of the Visegrad Group states did not agree on a joint candidate for European Commission president at their talks in Budapest on Thursday. Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš said it was necessary to choose a candidate who would be best and acceptable for all, adding that the Visegrad Group, comprising the Czech Republic, Poland, Hungary and Slovakia, had no ambitions to try to push through a candidate of their own choice. Hungary indicated last week that the group of four might present a joint position as regards the filling of crucial posts and support candidates who take the Visegrad Group seriously and support its interests. Czech farmers will receive 32 billion crowns in subsidies in the 2019-2020 period, with a bulk of the money coming from EU funds, according to the spokeswoman of the Czech Agricultural Intervention Fund, Vladimíra Nováková. They're being drawn by 31,000 farmers and agricultural companies, including those in the Agrofert conglomerate, which is at the centre of a dispute relating to the Prime Minister's suspected conflict of interest. According to Nováková, these are direct and compensation subsidies, which cannot be questioned in relation to the Prime Minister's possible conflict of interest. She added that the European Commission had not questioned their distribution either. The Czech Parliament will in future propagate excellent Bohemian and Moravian wines, which may be sold under the label Parliament Wine, and will give them as protocol gifts both here and abroad. The Speaker of the Lower House, Radek Vondráček, on Friday handed out awards to those winemakers who won in an open competition, allowing them to use the Parliament Wine label. He awarded wines in seven categories. 36 winemakers entered the competition with over 100 wines. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Saturday should be clear and sweltering hot around the country, with day temperatures reaching 34 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Coming up in today's programme, the 2019 Gracias Agit Awards have been presented in Prague. Czech archaeologists have been given a unique opportunity to carry out research in Syria. And later we take a closer look at the Eastern Partnership, an EU project which was started in Prague. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The The Czech Foreign Ministry has just presented its Gratias Agit Awards, honouring individuals and groups that promote the good name of the Czech Republic internationally. Among those recognised were the world-renowned plastic surgeon Bohdan Pomahac and the Russian NGO Memorial. Ian Willoughby has more.
Some 15 individuals and one organisation received the Gratias Agit Award in a ceremony at the Czech Foreign Ministry's Grand Černín Palace on Friday morning. Laureates included Boston-based surgeon Bohdan Pomahac, who led the team that performed the first full face transplant in the US, Susanna Cerova-Petrova of the piano-making Petrov family, Dr. Miloš Krajný, who promotes Czech music in Canada, and Karl Petrlik, an Austrian diplomat who served in Prague in two key periods, 1968 and 1989. They and the other recipients were presented with the prize by the Czech Foreign Minister, Tomáš Petříček.
These people who have been awarded Gratias Agit 2019 work selflessly for the good name of our country. They represent Czech culture, Czech literature abroad. They help to connect people in other countries with Czechoslovakia, Czech Republic. And they really, really do great work without any award so far.
Surgeon Bohdan Pomahac said that for him the prize was a major accolade.
I think that none of us probably expected that we would be nominated, and it's really an expression of great honor. When you look at all the people that have received it in the past and also today, it's a tremendous company of accomplished people that have done a lot of important things in the name of the Czech Republic. So it's a huge honor, and I'm deeply grateful for it.
A Gratias Agit also went to Memorial, an independent Russian association that documents the victims of communism in a number of post-Soviet states. Accompanying Boris Belenkin and Elena Zemkova of Memorial was Prague-based historian Adam Radilek. He explained the group's connection to the Czech Republic.
Memorial, already before the fall of the Soviet Union, started to collect documents concerning political repressions in the USSR. And among those that were repressed on Soviet territory were also Czechoslovak citizens. So due to their work, we know of hundreds or thousands of people that were either imprisoned in the Gulag camps or executed by firing squad during the Great Terror. At the same time, in their archives, we can find documents about people that took part in protests against the invasion of Czechoslovakia in 1968.
The Gratias Agit Prize was launched in 1997. Previous recipients include conductor Jiří Bělohlávek, gymnastics legend Věra Čáslavská, author and illustrator Petr Sís, and ice hockey star Jaromír Jágr.
Ian Willoughby reporting there. Now, the National Museum in Prague has been granted a unique license to carry out archaeological research in Syria. Under the agreement signed by the museum's director Michal Lukeš and his Syrian counterpart in Damascus, a team of Czech and Syrian archaeologists will be exploring a location in the coastal province of Latakia, the former site of the ancient port city of Ugarit. Ruth Frankova has more.
For several years now, the Czech National Museum has been involved in attempts to save Syria's rich archaeological heritage, including UNESCO monuments, which are threatened to be destroyed in the country's ongoing armed conflict. The efforts have been part of a wider program of humanitarian help agreed by the Czech government in 2016. Now, the National Museum has landed a unique chance to carry out excavations in one of the country's most interesting archaeological sites. The agreement on establishing a joint Czech-Syrian archaeological mission was signed by the General Director of the National Museum, Michal Lukeš, and the head of Syria's Directorate General of Antiquities and Museums, Mahmoud Hamoud, in Damascus last week, on the occasion of the opening of an exhibition on Czech castles and chateaus. Michal Stehlík, deputy to the National Museum's director, outlines more details.
Receiving this license is really very unique. It is not easy to get a permit for archaeological research in this location, and it is usually very expensive. The Syrian conservationists have granted us this license due to our long-term cooperation in saving Syria's heritage.
ta možnost vlastně budoucích archeologických výzkumů na tomto území.
Located at the crossroads of Africa, Asia and Europe, Syria has an incredibly rich architectural heritage which bears witness to many of the world's greatest empires. The Czech-Syrian archaeological research will take place in the coastal province of Latakia in the west of the country, located on the site of the ancient kingdom of Ugarit, which was destroyed during the Bronze Age.
Syria itself, together with Mesopotamia and Egypt, is considered one of the cradles of civilizations. The history of Ugarit dates back to 2000 years BC. There have been some discoveries made already in the 1920s showing its connections to the Hittite Empire and to the nation of Amorites, so it was really one of the oldest settlements in the world. So I think we have a big chance of finding some evidence of the Ugarit kingdom and their trade links with the rest of the world. And I would say that this research is unique not only in the Czech and Central European context, but in the context of the whole world.
The Czech team of archaeologists is expected to leave for Syria already in the autumn to carry out initial mapping of the place. The first excavations are expected to start in the spring of 2020. Unlike other locations such as Aleppo or Palmyra, the province of Latakia has luckily remained more or less untouched by Syria's ongoing civil war.
Ruth Frankova giving us that fascinating piece of news. Now, just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature of the day. In 2009, the Eastern Partnership, a project seeking closer ties between the EU and its Eastern European neighbours, was proclaimed in Prague. 10 years later, the Union is evaluating its progress and searching for prospective strategies. Whatever the future brings, though, it seems that it is likely to be a long-haul effort. The European Union's longest border is on its eastern flank, with the post-Soviet states of Ukraine, Moldova and Belarus. Across the Black Sea in the southern Caucasus lie three more former members of the USSR: Armenia, Azerbaijan and Georgia. Traditionally, they have been viewed as buffers between Russia and the West, an area where Russia has long exercised its cultural and economic influence. However, many of these countries have ambitions to integrate more closely into the European Union, whose lucrative trade area, as well as a reputation for strong governance and equal standing among states, are a powerful attraction. To build on these facts, a project called the Eastern Partnership was officially launched in Prague 10 years ago, during the Czech Republic's presidency of the European Council. EU politicians at the time stressed that it was not aimed at the other big player in the region, Russia, but rather as a common endeavour between EU members and the 6 Eastern European partner states, seeking to boost their democracies and governance while providing some of the benefits of closer integration within the European community. Jaroslav Kurfürst, the Czech Republic's ambassador to Brussels, says there was also another important component behind the Eastern Partnership.
The vision was to disrupt the geopolitical logic, the power-based international relations, and come with the anti-geopolitical logic, if you wish, the rule-based international relations, the effort of the EU not to get on its orbit the countries of the Eastern Partnership, but the effort to promote democracy, to promote the free choice of those countries, or rule of law, fight against corruption, support for civil society, human rights, and so on. I think that is the main goal of the Eastern Partnership.
There were different propositions for what the Eastern Partnership should look like, and EU's East Central European member states played a big role in this process. Both the Czechs and the Poles, the latter backed by Sweden, submitted their proposals between 2007 and 2008. Indeed, there are political analysts who have described the Eastern Partnership as a vehicle for influence for states such as Poland and the Czech Republic, both within the EU and in the Eastern European region, by leveraging it as an area of their expertise.
However, others have questioned whether the project has turned out to be as effective as originally intended. Mr. Kurfir says the Czech Republic has left a distinguishable footprint since the Eastern Partnership was announced in 2009.
The Czech Republic has been playing quite a strong role, I would say. Especially we were always putting the emphasis on the support for civil society, rule of law, independent media, fight against corruption, and of course we try to support the countries which were under the difficult geopolitical situation. We were working with the governments, all those governments are our important partners. I think this policy was always on the heart of the Czech government.
The past 10 years in the region have been turbulent and, at times, the Eastern Partnership has seemed as too weak a force to promote its goals. Often this has been the result of what some see as a geopolitical struggle in the region, played between Russia and the West, with the former operating in the logic of a zero-sum game. While he stresses that the Eastern Partnership is not directed against Russia, Mr. Kurfürst admits that diplomacy in the region often means dealing with what he calls the elephant in the room.
Russia is a big power, it's a global power, and it's unfortunately a very difficult power, and especially in the Eastern Partnership, it committed some unacceptable things, like really violating the territory of its neighbor and violating the international law. But it's clear that besides of this, let's say, regional dynamics, Russia is a global player and we have to take it into account. We have to keep up our principles. We don't have to get us pushed by the power of Russia, let's say, nuclear power and or the military power. I think Russia respects the partners which are able to stand up their own positions. But at the same time, this is a matter of fact that Russia is sitting in the Security Council, does have a nuclear weapons, has the biggest territory among all the countries. So that's the matter of fact.
This year, after 10 years of existence, experts and EU officials are looking into how the Eastern Partnership should evolve in the future. While things have moved forward for many of the EU's eastern partners who have since signed treaties integrating their countries closer into the Union's market and given their citizens more freedom to seek employment in the Union, the most sought-after prize, which was vaguely dangled in front of them in 2009, was full EU membership. This club invitation still seems very far away. Mr. Kurfürst does not rule out the chance of Eastern partners becoming full members in the future, but he says it is likely to be preceded by something else.
Well, I think that was Woody Allen who said that it's hard to make the predictions, especially about the future. But I think in the near future it's clear we have to properly implement the framework documents which were signed with the majority of the countries of the Eastern Partnership. Second, we will have to work on the resilience, which is a very general word, speaking about societal resilience, of course, security, economic resilience, and so on, helping the governments to get to be more resilient. And then we will have to think about the possibilities, what to do more, how to maybe give those countries more hope for the European perspective. And here you can have tools, you can have steps, even if the membership as such is not very popular as a final goal, of course, after the long process is not very popular with many member states, you can see some next step. And I think it is important for our partners, and we as the EU, we will have to look into that file.
The fact that the Czech ambassador to Brussels stresses boosting resilience as a major factor is understandable. Whether it is through a reliance on Russian gas supplies, the presence of frozen conflicts, or the weakness of independent media, the European Union's eastern partners still face major challenges. Another more immediate issue is Britain's planned exit from the European Union. So far, as a member, Britain has been part of the Eastern Partnership and a very helpful ally for the Czech Republic in the region, says Mr. Kurfürst.
It will affect the dynamics of the diplomatic discussion within the EU because Britain was having quite strong voice and British voice was very close to ours. In that way, we are losing the ally and an important partner. On the other hand, we will definitely try as the Czech diplomacy to keep the British diplomacy and the British partners on board as close as possible to that policy. The British government is activating itself in, strengthening resilience, support for the media, and it is active in the region. So there are plenty of ways how to cooperate, and we will definitely use those possibilities.
In what way was it similar?
The same values, maybe, the similar strategic approach. For example, the Eastern Partnership for, Czech diplomat of my generation means some reminder to 1968, when the doctrine of limited sovereignty was applied to Czechoslovakia, and we just couldn't decide freely about ourselves. And what the EU tried to offer those post-Soviet countries, which are part of the Eastern Partnership, was to finish with that thinking of limited sovereignty and treat them as a sovereign partner, which have their own statehood, their own history, and support them. So that, I think, is shared also in the British position. That was a common ground.
However Brexit turns out, when it comes to the Eastern Partnership, the EU's most pressing focus is likely to be achieving the largest possible progress in its 20 deliverables for 2020 plan, which has set out targets to be achieved by next year in areas including governance, connectivity, society and economic development. A recent review in March 2019 found that most of the targets are on track to be achieved, but found that there was only moderate progress in areas including the support for judicial reforms, the engagement of civil society organisations, and environmental support. It will certainly be interesting to see how the Eastern Partnership develops in the next 10 years. Sadly, that is all from us today, however. Thank you very much for joining us, and don't forget that if you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We certainly wish you a very nice rest of the day.